afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Good afternoon, Dave Allen.
Happy Friday, Melody.
Oh, boy, what a week it's been. A very up-and-down week and a very emotional week, and a lot of things are just hopping right along. And we got some good prices on our gold and silver coins. People are taking advantage of the little pullbacks that we've seen this week, both in gold and silver. So we're going to continue to run some specials today. And before we get started, I want to remind the listeners, today is February 23rd, 2018. And let's go ahead and get to the gold prices today. We have gold today is down $2.10 today at $13.30. We have silver down 8 cents at $16.61. Platinum was down 2 at $999. And palladium was up $6 at $1,045. The USDX today is stronger by 0.10 at $89.84. Crude oil was up 80 cents today at 83.57. And, of course, the paper markets today just, oh, my gosh. I don't know what boosted their little giddy up today. But we had the Dow up almost 1.5% today, up 349 points, 25,311. The NASDAQ was up 127, 7,337. And the NASDAQ was up 43 at 2,747. So I'm really not sure what was out there to really push these numbers to the degree that they had. They were looking to sell some debt out there, so that's probably what pushed it up. They were actually able to find some buyers for it. I don't know, but 10-year yield did pull down below that 2.90. We're down 0.05 at 287% for the 10-year yield. And then, of course, we saw pressure on the euro, 123 down 1.8, down 0.18. And with all the warnings and, you know, with all the fear, no panic, even pressure on Bitcoin today, the paper markets enjoyed, I think, one of their biggest rallies that we've seen in a couple days. But, of course, it's also the end of, well, we're getting close to the end of the month, not the end of the month quite yet. Did you see anything special, Dave, that would have pushed these markets to the level, or is it just a regular, typical day in the neighborhood?
I did not. I think we'll have to wait and see what we hear from the trading floors.
Well, I mean, there really wasn't even any good reports on anything as far as anybody. I mean, you know, just. Any even news reports I did see that the Fed sees the economy past full employment. I'm not so sure that is enough to push the markets up to 350 points. It was a little interesting today. As far as the as it goes, but some things in the news today. You had the Toys R Us; they're planning to close another 200 more stores and lay off part of its corporate staff. Now, of course, this comes after last year when they were declared bankruptcy in September. They announced that it was going to close 180 stores, but first they had to borrow some money so they could keep the stores open through Christmas. So, you know, it just fascinates me. So, you know, let's file bankruptcy and then we'll borrow some money just to get us through the holidays, and maybe we'll make enough money through the Christmas to see if we can keep the stores open. But obviously they can't, and they're going to close about 400 stores, which is nearly half of its operation. The planned original closures, which need court approval, are expected to begin early next month and mostly completed by the end of April. The company's CEO said these actions are necessary to give them the best chance to emerge from bankruptcy proceedings as a more viable and competitive company. Dave?
Yeah, I'm seeing, Melody, that, I mean, there's one report here in Bloomberg that the stock rally was due in large part to growing confidence that the Fed isn't going to rush to raise interest rates as the economy picks up steam. So hey, perhaps that was enough to set off the algorithms in this new age of quick computer related.
I don't think it has anything
trading.
I don't think it has anything to do with the Fed's possibly delaying the interest rates. The real problem is you had that 10-year yield going up to that 3%, and they had to do something to soften it because everybody knows what's going to happen. And I think they were doing a little bit of damage control, as you said. You know, they were coming out with the idea that, you know, maybe the Feds, you know, with the full employment and everything, maybe they won't be so aggressive of increasing rates. But, you know, that 10-year, and what you talked about the other day about the 30-year also creeping up there. So to me, it's damage control. And, you know, with their comments for the damage control, you know, it pushed the markets up to 350 points. So, yeah, I can see that connection. Absolutely.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, we see the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits fell unexpectedly last week to a 45-year low almost, although claims for six states were estimated because of Monday's President's Day holiday. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits dropped 7,000 to a seasonally adjusted 222,000 for the week ending February 17th, that according to the U.S. Department of Labor, suggesting net job growth in February. Claims fell to 216,000 a month ago, which was the lowest level since January of 1973. And this was the 155th straight week, Melody, that claims remained below the 300,000 threshold, that magic number that's often associated with a strong labor market. That's the longest such stretch since 1970, when the labor market was, of course, a lot smaller. So, I mean, with the U.S. labor market considered near full employment, or some are saying even below it, the so-called jobless rate at a 17-year low of 4.1%. Fears again of tightening labor market conditions starting to push up wage growth, which could help to lift inflation closer, if not above, the Fed's 2% target. Now, minutes of the central bank's January meeting published the other day showed policymakers fairly upbeat in their assessment of the economy given these latest numbers. And a number judged that the continued tightening in labor markets was likely to translate into faster wage increases at some point. Mel?
Well, you know, you were mentioned that the Feds, you know, with the report of possible, you know, increase, they might soften this year. But in New York, there were four major Fed officials that were speaking today on economic policy in front of other policymakers, academics, and, you know, economists. You had the Cleveland Fed President, Loretta Mester, and Kansas City Fed President, Esther George. They're going to be discussing the objectives of monetary policy on a panel. And the New York Fed President, William Dudley, and Boston Fed President, Eric Rosengren, will be speaking about the balance sheet and the Fed policy. They got a lot to talk to. They have a lot to talk about and speak about. San Francisco's Fed President, John Williams, is also talking today, but in Los Angeles at a different event. And as turmoil surrounding you know what happened in Florida, and everything is getting out of control, and Russian interference in the 2016 election, you know, continues. And I mean, it's just pretty much the same. We did have President Trump speak. He was meeting with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull at the White House today, and I guess the two leaders are expected to comment on economic growth and fighting terrorism.
Yeah, Melody, the administration's betting that wages can rise without sparking runaway inflation, but the world's leading bond manager isn't so sure. In fact, I think he's begging to differ. Fed policymakers and Wall Street economists have been hotly debating inflation, within minutes from the most recent Fed Open Market Committee meeting showing that most members were divided over what the current trend means. As we know, the question for investors is whether wages can rise at a healthy pace without triggering inflationary concerns. Again, stock market indexes fell about 12% the other week following the wage reports earlier that and the accompanying inflation fears at that point, which are primarily that the Fed will be forced to raise interest rates more quickly than anticipated to keep inflation from rising above its 2% target. In fact, a tweet this morning, Jeffrey Gundlach, who's the billionaire founder of Double Line Capital, expressed doubt that income can rise appreciably without causing inflationary pressures. Now, according to Gundlach's thinking, rising wages can hurt either way by cutting into profits if inflation doesn't rise, or by pushing bond yields higher if inflation does go up, which in turn, of course, could hurt stock valuations. Of course, White House officials are leaning toward the scenario where wages rise without inflation. So, you know, markets, we know, have been nervous over how the scenario plays out. In addition to the stock market drop, government bond yields have spiked in recent days, although the key two-year and 10-year did both move down slightly yesterday and again today. According to the Fed's January meeting minutes, this is sort of an esoteric thing for followers out there. Fed officials still tend to adhere to what is known as the Phillips curve, which shows that higher wages generally do come with higher inflation. So follow the inflation metric closer, listeners. As many of you know, the price of gold, silver, and other precious metals often closely associated with how quickly consumer prices are rising. Melody.
And the gold's relationship with inflation expectations have gotten kind of interesting lately. Many market observers are watching one key level for gold in particular. Consider the conflict of the gold market. Gold has traditionally been a good hedge against inflation, but it hasn't seen much increased demand lately, even in the face of rising inflation fears. And it's not like gold hasn't rallied. It's up over a little over 6% since mid-December, but it still hasn't broken out yet. And it has tested key resistance of $1,375 per ounce, but it hasn't managed to break above that level. And I just want to bring this in before we talk a little bit more about that $1,375. You know, when we talk about inflation, when you have a fiat currency, I mean, you can just inflation is a given. It's not going away. They can't control it forever if they think that they're controlling it today. And David Stockman had a great, he did a great article. It came out yesterday that he posted. And he's talking about the debt. And he was talking about the debt in June of 1970. The federal debt held by the public was $275 billion. And he says it had taken all of 188 years to accumulate. That is to say, Uncle Sam had borrowed an average of $28,000 per week during the 9,776 weeks since George Washington was sworn in as the first nation's president. But he goes on and he just talks about this huge amount of debt. Folks, yeah, when we talk about inflation, if you really believe the Fed can control it, and I mean, I think they're trying to control it on a day-to-day basis, but inflation is here. You know, unless you don't do anything, you know, if you don't buy anything, if you don't buy food, if you don't buy, you know, if you don't heat your home, if you don't, you know, do any of the needs in life, if you know, maybe you're homeless, you know, you might not be affected by inflation, but everything is rising. We have oil prices that are rising. Has anybody ever seen the byproducts of oil? It's just not gasoline. It's everything is a byproduct of oil. So everything continues to get more and more expensive. And I didn't mean to go off on that edge, but it's just, you know, sometimes it just, you know, when these when they think that they can control inflation, and I guess as long as they say, hey, there's no inflation and we're going to keep it at the 2%, You know, everybody else ignores all the other indicators that inflation is much higher than that. But anyway, Dave, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. We were talking about the 1375 mark on gold.
No, that's fine. We're slated to talk more about David Stockman's article in the second segment of our show. But until then, you know, listeners will probably recall that this 1375 mark was gold's highs in both the 2016 and last year. So a break above that line would certainly give gold a, you know, a technically significant higher high. And what's more, the 1375 level is the top line, and many analysts, they call it an ascending triangle pattern. So a break that above that level would push real bullish, would prove, excuse me, real bullish on at least a technical basis. And this is particularly true because gold's already broken above its six-year trend line. That's going all the way back to the big highs in 2011. Of course, we always have to wait for an actual break of this key resistance level before declaring anything official. Still, investors ought to consider that any meaningful break above 1375 would confirm that the multi-year downtrend has reversed. Gold on Thursday was trading modestly higher at 1332 per ounce. As Melody said, it was fairly flat, slightly down today when the paper markets closed. Melody?
Yeah, gold is actually doing very, very well. You know, since they did, you know, the rate increase back in December, it's really been strong. We have fluctuations, and lots of times people do focus a lot on the price. I was speaking to someone yesterday, and it's like if you were holding an ounce of gold in your hand today and, you know, you were holding paper in the other hand and the markets crashed but gold prices stayed the same, which would you rather be holding? The paper that crashed or the price of gold that stayed the same? And that's what we're going to experience. So I do believe we're going to see 5,000 gold. I do believe we're going to see higher prices for silver. But, you know, we focus on those levels. Now, gold and silver are dirt cheap compared to where they're going. And so it's a great opportunity to be buying, to accumulating. If you haven't purchased yet, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And as Dave said later on the program, we're going to talk about the Stockton report. And I think we'll include that in our newsletter. So make sure you go to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and sign up for the weekly newsletter. And I hear the music playing, and we'll be returning in just a few short minutes. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And it's Friday. It is February 23rd, 1-800-375-4188. This program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, and we do appreciate all your support. Profits from Discount Gold and Silver, a large, very large part of it goes right back into these programs. It goes back into the support of many other programs to help educate everyone on the importance of what's going on in this country and, just to continue learning the truth. And we do appreciate your support because if you support us, you're supporting many, many other programs. So thank you. And it always tickles me, Dave, when I get a call from someone that says, I've been following you for years and years in the 90s, since the 90s. I have kept track of you and followed you, and it's humbling, to say the least. And
sure is. There are a lot of loyal listeners out there.
Yes. And so we always enjoy hearing from you. I always enjoy hearing from you. And whether you send me a little note in the mail or if you make a purchase, and I get the nicest compliments. And, when people send their funds in for the coins that they've purchased, and, it all comes back to you, listeners. It's really all about you. So thank you. And we're going to move on now. Before I get all teary-eyed, and it's been a long month. It's the shortest month of the year, but it was also the longest. But
it's probably a good transition. Probably a majority of listeners are walking off to find their box of Kleenex.
And I'm not invested in the tissue company itself.
Thank you for that disclosure.
But, yes.
So Melody, it's Friday, so yep. It must be Brevity is Golden. Listeners, welcome to our weekly segment, our short segment. We've been talking a lot about rising interest rate yields the last few weeks, and visitors to CNBC's website have been asked this week, where could rising interest rate yields do the most damage? Interestingly, of the roughly 4,300 respondents, 61% said rising yields could damage equity prices the most. 23% said it could negatively affect the Federal Reserve's plans. 10% said it could damage the president's policy agenda. And 7% believe merger and acquisition activity could be impacted the worst. Folks, it's all about expectations in the market these days, as it is most days. But isn't that almost always the case? And that, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
All right, we're going to have a couple of... I guess we've added another segment. And, sometimes by Friday, maybe the last Friday of the month, we just need to lighten up a little bit, right. Because when you do finances, it's not where we talk a lot about, politics and so forth. I mean, I do on Tuesdays and Thursdays and so forth, but, and sometimes we just need to lighten up, and maybe I need to lighten up a little bit. So the last Friday of the month, we're going to have a new little segment, and we're going to hand out what we're calling the Golden Grandiose Award. It's going to go to the individual who displays shameless over-the-top display of their wealth. And our inaugural award goes to Michael Dell, who was the founder of Dell Computer and is the current CEO of a successor company called Dell Technologies. Dell reportedly was the buyer behind the record-setting sale of a Manhattan penthouse a few years ago. While the $100.4 million sale price of the six-bedroom duplex was previously reported, the buyer had remained unknown. This extravagant New York property is one of several Dell properties that Dell owns. He also purchased a penthouse last year in the Four Seasons private residences in Boston, which had listed for a measly $40 million, as well as an $11 million condo in Boston's Millennium Tower in 2016.
Boston now,
Is he buying this for family members or what?
I mean, who knows? I mean, it could be that his other business interests are up there. Maybe he has a son or daughter in college up there. Maybe he's a Red Sox fan. Who knows? But it'd be interesting. I a lot of these new high-end towers are being built and occupied with 5 and sometimes 10 year property tax abatements.
That's true.
So, you know, that just be interesting. You know, a lot of people, particularly developers, sell these kind of properties as a, you know, just a boon to downtown businesses, restaurants, clothing shops, and the like. But anyway.
But he also owns, he owns more.
Oh.
He owns an expensive property on the Kona coast of Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
Known as the Raptor Residence. The Manhattan unit is in a skyscraper of Manhattan's Billionaires Row at 157 West 57th Street, a little south of Central Park at 1,000 feet tall. It's among the tallest buildings in Manhattan. Let's see if there's any more interesting information in this. You know, I remember there was an old movie. It was an old black and white movie, and I can't remember the person's name. I see his face, and he's standing in this New York building, and he says, "On top of the world, Mom. I'm on top of the world." And then I guess he gets killed or something. But
no.
Have you ever seen that black and white movie?
Probably, but I can't remember it.
Come on, listeners. I want to get an email, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, and let me know who that person was. I see him, but I can't even remember the name of the movie. But that's your little trivia question today, folks. Mm. So congratulations, Michael Dell. You are this month's winner of the Golden Grandiose Award.
That was fun.
Fun?
Yeah. Step back from, you know, the real serious, impactful news that we're, you know,
there's been a lot
tied up in. Yeah, I mean, you just feel your stress level rising as, you know, as you're talking about it. You know, I wonder how Mr. Dell's 30, 40, and 50,000 year employees are doing. Anyway. Let's turn back to one of our favorite subjects on financial survival, debt. As Melody had mentioned earlier, David Stockman, renowned economist and former Reagan budget director turned intense debt hawk, is hawking again this week about the June 1970 days when the federal debt held by the public, as Melody mentioned, passed the $258 billion level to $275. And again, it took 188 years for that to accumulate. Uncle Sam borrowing an average of $28,000 per week during the almost 10,000 weeks since George Washington was sworn in as Presidente Numero Uno. Why is that figure important, Melody? Well, it just so happens the U.S. Treasury this week has been selling, and next week as well, close to that amount in government debt, $258 billion to be exact. Uncle Sam's scheduled debt emission this week will nearly equal his cumulative borrowing during the nation's first 188 years and first 37 presidents. Be glad you rode that helicopter back to the Pacific when you did, Mr. Nixon. And yes, Stockman points out there's been some considerable inflation since June 1970, and not the least because exactly 13 months later, that tricky Dick Nixon decided to pull the plug on Bretton Woods, and the dollar's anchored to a fixed weight of gold. And Melody, you for sure know what happened next. American economy got a big hunk of inflation and destructive central bank financialization over the next half century. That's what. The price level today is five times higher as measured by the GDP deflator than it was back then. So in today's dollar, the 1970 debt figure would be about $1.2 trillion. This is Stockman's way of saying that the government's on the verge of borrowing as much money in apples-to-apples dollars during this year ahead as did the first 37 presidents of the United States. This amounts, he says, to a monumental debt problem, one that's most definitely not priced in the current stock and bond markets. To be clear, folks, Stockman isn't talking about just the $21 trillion of public debt that'll be on the books after this week's borrowing binge, but the entire $67 trillion shackle of public and private debt that now strangles the U.S. economy. The fact is, the $1.5 trillion of total public and private debt outstanding back then amounted to 150% of GDP. By contrast, at $67 trillion of total debt today, the U.S. leverage ratio stands at nearly 3.5 times. And there lies the giant financial skunk lying in wait in the woodpile. And that's because the massive growth of central bank credit unleashed by the Camp David folly of 1971 has finally reached its limit, as Melody and her co-hosts have been saying for a long time, even by the lights of our overtly Keynesian central bankers. So, you know, Stockman does say, if it goes without saying, that you couldn't have found one economist or layperson in Washington, at Harvard, Chicago, wherever, in June of 1970, who would have recommended or even imagined an 82 times explosion of the Fed's balance sheet during the next 50 years. Listen to this, folks. In June 1970, the GDP was $1.1 trillion, and it's since expanded by 18 times to 19.6. By contrast, total public and private debt was $1.58 trillion and has since expanded 42 times to $67 trillion. Stockman claims it's one thing to permit interest rates to rise by 200 to 300 basis points when the economy is carrying $30 trillion worth of debt, but it's an altogether different kettle of fish when the burden is $67 trillion. So, in short, he believes the U.S. economy has been borrowing and printing money so long that its position on the economic and financial map has been lost sight of, meaning the impact of the coming big reversal at the Fed is not even remotely appreciated. Mel, you've been saying that for how long? Here's the thing to remember and watch, folks. Up to $2 trillion of Federal Reserve balance sheet shrinkage has never happened before, nor has the impact been any more imagined at present than it had been the 82 times explosion of the Fed's balance sheet back in June 1970. As Melody always said, debt is the most important thing to watch. Melody, sorry, a long but ever important topic.
You know, it truly is, and it's just because debt is what has really increased everything in this country for so long. And so that's the fundamental reasons why, you know, everything seems to be flowing along as it is, and it's not real. And, you know, people will wake up one day and realize it. I believe I've always said we'll wake up one day to a brand new world. People want warnings. There's analysts out there that give warnings day in and day out. Oh, it's going to be March 3rd. Oh, it's going to be, you know, April 7th. It's going to be, folks, we're living in the warning. Mm-hmm. This is the warning. Every day is a warning. Every time we see these numbers about the debt and the condition, it doesn't matter if you see buildings going up. Doesn't matter. I mean, certainly, you know, there's going to be some sort of a rebound. You know, you'll think that you're seeing a good economy, but a good economy can't exist when it's all debt. And so again, we'll wake up to a brand new world. It's going to happen very quickly. People will scramble. People will try to get out of the paper. Computers are going to freeze up. You won't be allowed. You won't be, you know, your computers will crash. Your broker's computers will crash, you know, and they'll do what they did before. Many of them didn't answer their phones because they couldn't handle the number of calls that were coming in. So they just don't handle your phones. And we always seem to forget. We have such small memories, short memories. Some have small.
Well, small have short. Too.
But, and that's what happens. And it takes... And when they try to, you know, when they try to eliminate the boom and bust cycles, that's, you know, with the creation of the Federal Reserve, that's when it's all started. That's when it all started. You can't control. You can control when you're not in debt, but once you're in debt, the debt controls you. And they can only micromanage, you know, minute to minute, day to day, or hour by hour in order to keep the things flowing. There was, we're going to be heading into a break here shortly, but there was another. And again, these are all types of reports, you know, all from insiders. They're all saying, hey, folks, you know, they don't want to get caught like they did the last time in 2008, where they were, every one of them was out there saying that the market will never pull back. It's different this time. They're coming out there and saying, hey, the economy is going into a recession. Ray Dalio, he's a billionaire investor. We've mentioned him here and there on this program throughout the years. And he's saying, no, we're going to have a recession before the next presidential election in 2020. Well, maybe that's when they'll admit it, but I think we're in the recession. You know, it always takes, we talked about this, you brought this up the other day, it always takes, what, a year and a half before they actually will admit that we're in a recession?
Yeah.
But he reasoned that it might not take long to get there and then move on to a bust phase. And he was talking about the U.S. economy. He says it's not currently in a bubble. I don't know if the economy is in a bubble or not, but there's, you know, the assets, the engines surrounding the economy are in bubbles. But he reasoned that it might not take long to get there and then to move on to a bust phase. He says the probability of a recession prior to the next presidential election is relatively high, 70%. And Dave, I think Dalio's projections are, you know, extremely optimistic if he thinks that the U.S. economy isn't now in a bubble, as I just said. Virtually everything we've been talking about on the show over the past 6 months points to a big downturn coming much sooner than 2020. And we're going to stop here and we're going to take another break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with and more of Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And I had a chance to check the emails while we were on break, and I had several come through, but I want to thank Top of the World was the movie that I was referencing, and I want to thank you for sending that to me. It was White Heat with Jimmy Cagney. Like I said, I could vision it, I could see him, and then they also sent me a White Heat ending, a 1949, they said, awesome version. So I'm going to watch that right after the program today, although I'll still be here to take your calls, 1-800-375-4188, but there you go, White Heat with James Cagney, on top of the world, Ma, on top of the world. And Janet Yellen, we all know, and this will probably be the last time we ever mention Yellen's name again. I hope so. We certainly quote Greenspan quite a bit, mainly because of his tenure. He's been there. He was there for such a long time, and he was originally a gold bug, and not quite sure why he sold out on the on gold, but he certainly had I can't remember how long he was at the Fed, but quite a long. Janet Yellen concluded her four-year tenure at the Federal Reserve on the eve of handing her reins over to the newly confirmed chairman, Jerome Powell. There was a segment praising Yellen as one of the most effective Fed chairs in history. The story featured an often cited quote by the Mercatus Center's Scott Sumner, praising Yellen's performance. Yellen is on glide path to near perfection. Really? Do you say that, Dave?
Melody, Yellen's success is harder to dispute using the Fed's own criteria, that is, its dual mandate, which gives its two main policy objectives, maintaining full employment and achieving low and stable rates of inflation. Now, in Yellen's 4 years in charge, unemployment fell from 6.7 to 4.1% when she left at the beginning of the month. That's slightly lower than most estimates of full employment. Inflation consistently hovered just below the Fed's target of 2%. So Yellen has certainly accomplished hitting the Fed's goal during her brief tenure. But that doesn't necessarily mean that her tenure will be or should be considered a success.
No, it doesn't. And what's conveniently neglected in stories like the one from the Vice News tonight, Dave, is that the Fed's dual mandate is pretty questionable policy at best, so it might not be the best standard to judge Fed chairs on. For example, some independent observers favor using nominal GDP price level targeting as a better gauge to measure performance. But by this standard, Yellen's performance has been far from historic. Mm-hmm. And balance sheet remains bloated, and its footprint on the amount of credit in the economy remains as deeply entrenched as ever. But there's even more basic criticisms of Yellen's tenure. For all of her short-term success, Yellen's Fed did very little to undo the damage of Bernanke's Fed. And it did even less to put monetary policy on a sustainable long-run path. And as long as we're intent as a country to continue letting monetary policy dictate our economy, balance sheet normalization is a risky prospect for the Fed. Sell off those assets too fast and the fragile recovery might spiral back into a full-fledged financial crisis. Basically, they are between a rock and a hard place. Yellen ultimately followed her predecessor's lead, and she elected to kick the can down the road and the Fed's normalization has crawled forward at a snail's pace. But none of this is to say what Yellen did was a bad job. It's probably too soon to hand out final grades, but while many seem intent to go ahead and give Yellen an A or maybe even as low as a B, an incomplete is probably more appropriate. Incomplete because by failing to begin implementing a true policy, normalization, by getting rid of the Fed's interest or excess reserve policy and drawing down the Fed's balance sheet, she and Bernanke have left what could very well amount to a multi-trillion dollar house of cards for their successors. And that house could come tumbling down as early as Jerome Powell's even first to 6 months in his position.
Yeah, I mean, listeners, check out our website first thing next week. Look for David Stockman's article that Melody is going to include. He has some interesting insights here that are right in line with what Melody just said. Yeah, it's it'll be interesting. I mean, I've watched this week as the pundits on CNBC and Bloomberg News were debating back and forth about Janet's term. I mean, the one string that stuck me, I mean, all of them, all these pundits that were debating were invested somehow, vested in the paper markets. And so the underlying assumption of among all of them, whether, you know, they think Yellen should have an A or a D or an F for that matter, is that, you know, this system in which we operate, this system of just paper money, is a good thing, is the engine that makes our economy run. And sometimes it runs, sometimes it crawls. Sometimes it breaks down. We're on the verge of a breakdown. And it's coming sooner than I think certainly a lot of the pundits want to believe.
Well, the whole problem is the way they started out, they took away our gold-backed currency. And it took all accountability away. It took all, you know, and people have heard me say this thousands and thousands of times over the years. We wouldn't have the government today if we were still in a gold-backed currency. We wouldn't have the runaway debt that we have if we still had a, you know, we wouldn't have all the entitlements if we had stayed on a gold-backed currency. Certainly there's going to be debt, you know, but, you know, it was still accountable. It wouldn't have gone unchecked, and that's basically what they had. They had a blank checkbook that they could just continue to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in debt. And you know, we don't even know if there's things off budget. I remember, I don't know if you remember, Dave, or if you have any comments, but even during the Iraqi war, most of that was all off budget. And isn't all wars off budget? So is that true, or do you know anything?
Yeah, parts of that. I think that would be an excellent topic for a future show. I think we can put our thoughts together and do a little research and get some important facts for our listeners and talk about that in more depth, because it's something that a lot of people don't know and certainly don't understand. But yeah, there's this black hole in every federal government budget. So we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. How about that?
Sounds like a great plan. And so our debt could basically be much greater than even what. Anyway, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, Melody, about 2 weeks ago, Chinese President Xi Jinping made this lofty declaration that China would trade $500 billion in goods with Latin America over the next 5 years and provide $250 billion in direct investment there. Not long ago, those targets would have seemed crazy. But based on current trends, they're not out of the question. Axios is reporting today, for example, that the Monroe Doctrine is running up against what they refer to as the Xi reality in Latin America, as China has now surpassed the U.S. as the leading trading partner with several South American countries, including Brazil. And it's stepped up investments in the region dramatically at a time when U.S. engagement is starting to decline overall. While China is growing its economic presence in the region, other countries, including the U.S., are investing less. In fact, foreign direct investment in Latin America and the Caribbean dropped overall for five consecutive years from 2011 to 2016. That according to the United Nations, making China an even more important partner with them. The China Development Bank loaned $114 billion to Latin American and Caribbean countries between 2005 and 2016. That surpasses lending from the World Bank and the Inter-American Development Bank. That's important, Melody, because U.S. loans flow out of those two banks. Two decades ago, the U.S. was the primary source of imported goods in virtually all of Latin America. That's changing fast.
Yes, it is. In fact, Chinese investment in Brazil, the region's largest economy, totaled $61 billion between 2003 and 2016, with $11 billion coming in 2016 alone. China is also a growing factor right across the border, completing 40-plus investment deals valued at over $4 billion with Mexico from 2014 to 2016. China has dramatically increased its influence as an international investor over the past 30 years, from $450 million in 1986 to $217 billion in 2016. And if you compare that with the U.S. $311 billion in 2016, China's catching up. Yes, despite its status as a developing nation, China is well on its way to becoming the world's largest investor. And Dave, I mean, the thing of it is, when we talk about debt, you know, yes, we have problems. We want to bring manufacturing back. And, you know, people will say, well, that's good that our money's not being and going to these other places. No, if we had a great economy here, if we weren't in debt, we'd be able to do it. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the money to do any of this, you know, so we can't. And yes, now that money is supposed to be refunneled back into this country, but we don't have the money to refunnel it back into this country.
We're stretched thin.
Yeah. So this looks like, you know, and this isn't about, you know, patting China on the back, you know, with their ability to go in and around, but they're going in where we used to be. And the reason we used to be there was because we were, you know, we were vibrant. You know, we had industry and we saw these things broken down, but that was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big part of the reasons why a lot of those agreements, the way some of these agreements were written and so forth, it was because of the debt. We didn't have the money, so we had to give things away. And it's coming back to bite us. You know, it's coming back to haunt us. And so China is well on its way to becoming the world's largest investor.
Yeah, it is. I laugh at the term developing nation as it's applied to China. But here's what gold and silver investors need to watch, Melody. The dangers of Chinese influence, especially in our hemisphere, are a particular risk in Latin American nations that have unstable governments. I mean, like Venezuela.
Yeah.
I mean, Venezuela was the top recipient of Chinese lending dollars over a 10 or 11 year period, that 2005 to 2016 period. Nations such as Chile and Peru that have relatively strong governments, they're comparatively resilient and can avoid the Chinese influence in their domestic policies. The U.S. State Department official said this trend reflects Latin Americans' curse: trouble developing its own manufacturing sector. And you alluded to that just a few minutes ago. The U.S. undermined Latin American manufacturing to a certain extent with NAFTA, and then Europe did the same. with China, it's the same cycle all over again with a different international power this time. Ladies and gentlemen, the sleeping giant has awoken and is learning to climb the tree of wealth and influence. Stay tuned.
And so, you know, it's so important to save. It's so important to save for your retirement. It's so important to get out of that paper, because that's what's going to be... because those are just all promises to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's get something real. And I don't know if we have time for this little story. It's about...
About Roberta.
Yeah, we don't have time really to go into that. It's pretty long. But
we can talk about that next week.
Yeah, we're going to talk about baby boomers. We're one. Reaching retirement. We have between 8,000 and 10,000 Americans that are turning 65 every day. And they're at risk of everything that they saved and worked so hard for. They're at risk for getting wiped out. Wiped out. To a large degree. And they won't know it until they wake up that one day and everything has changed. 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you, Dave. Until then, have a safe weekend. Good night and God bless. Bye-bye, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.